entirely in the hands of the parents, as we saw from the Shuvas HaRashba, for example, that we studied 2 weeks ago. This was not an acute problem until various, except on the fringes, where blackguards tried to impose their will on the families, etc., etc. But in a situation where the original intent of the law, namely that this is a private contract between a man and a woman in which they enter in upon their own free will, when that obtains, then of course it's a very, very difficult situation where anything goes wrong. And the problem here, which has existed all the way back to the time of Hillel, as we will see and remind ourselves soon enough, is how to intervene with this notion that marriage is a purely private contract between individuals. Do the rabbinical authorities have any power to intervene in this contract in one form or another? And if so, what power do they have, and how is this power defined? What are its sources, and how can we use them? And the story is, in a sense, sad, at least in its current phase, because whereas there were... Is there another chair? No, no, there isn't anyone in there, but there's one. There's an armchair. There should be a because this problem, when it became acute, 200 marriage, which hadn't existed prior to that time in Western society, and when the rabbis, or at least some of them, were aware of the future problems caused by the institution of civil marriage and civil divorce, and some of them were willing and able to take steps to deal with this problem, that came just before and then during the time of the reform movement, which gave rise to what is now known as orthodoxy, something that hadn't existed before, and the inability of the rabbinical authorities, because of the fear of people on their immediate right, to actually come to grips with this problem. So the recent history of the subject, unfortunately, as we recounted many, many times, is sad in the sense that it led to a paralysis of a problem which is of the utmost importance, and which, if it's not resolved, will lead to disaster. But let's look at the origins of it, and then sort of let's look at the positive side, namely how various distinguished authorities, both in the past and in the recent past, viewed this as an issue. Okay. So in the Gemara, we find five cases, six sources, but one is just a repetition of another, five situations in which the Gemara uses the phrase "Afkeinu Rabbanan l'Kiddushin Mineh," that the rabbis have uprooted the marriage, annulled the marriage, and so on. And these five cases, as I list on the first page, consist of, first of all, a situation where the husband issues a divorce, that is, gives a divorce to a messenger to deliver to his wife, and then changes his mind. And if, for example, the husband and wife are present in the same town, and before the divorce is delivered to the wife, he changes his mind and informs the wife of this, then, of course, the divorce has been canceled and invalidated. There's no problem. But if he sends the divorce by messenger, and the wife is not notified of the cancellation of the divorce, even though he has, in fact, in terms of, you had a stopwatch, an international clock, you could assert that he has canceled the divorce prior to its delivery. In a situation like that, the wife is caught in a bind. She'll never know whether she is divorced or is not divorced. So the principle there was to validate a divorce, which in principle should be invalid. What's that? Who's... Is it the machine, or is it the...
Everybody has a problem with the hearing.
Okay. All right.
It's not my machine.
the no, go ahead. It's, that doesn't bother me a lot. All right. So therefore,
I'm the audio man.
Therefore, here is the situation where, in order to validate a divorce which is strictly invalid, what the rabbis had to do was cancel the marriage in some sense or another. There's no second marriage. Just, you know, is this woman divorced or not? The Chazal are declaring that she is divorced, even though, according strictly, if this were to be viewed as a purely private contract, until the actual execution of the contract, each party has the right to change his mind. So from the point of view of private law, if I intend to engage in a contract, but before the contract is actually executed, I relent and change my mind, there's no contract. And therefore, strictly speaking, if this was purely an issue of private law, the wife should not be divorced. Yet the rabbis declare her to be divorced. That's the first case. The second case is interesting in that it's a contradiction of a similar case that had occurred previously, and this is a situation in which there was an elopement, which is being described as a kidnapping, and which the rabbis declared to be an invalid marriage. The third case is the one that we encounter in our Gemara, where the principle of Ein Tanet Ones Begitin. Normally, if a person engages in a contract, as we've studied over the last 2 weeks, and binds himself to do something, and intends a penalty if he, for example, does not fulfill his condition, but then by force is unable to fulfill his condition, then he can make a claim of force majeure and say that the penalty or whatever should not apply. Ein Tanat Ones Begitin says that claim that I was forced into this against my own free will is suspended for reasons that the Gemara makes clear in the case of Gittin. The fourth case is where a person issues a divorce because he thinks he's going to die from a particular illness, deathbed gifts, deathbed assignations, deathbed bequests are usually honored even if they're not, they don't meet all the standards of contract law, but all of them are normally considered to be conditional. If I decide that I'm going to give some piece of my property away to someone, I only intended to do it if indeed I was going to die. Because of the fact that I can't choose my heirs, it has to be treated as an actual gift some instant before I die. But nevertheless, that gift was never meant to be executed if I recover. And again, this rule, the Gemara will tell us, does not apply in the case of a divorce. If a man divorces his wife, even though for other such actions, if he takes them on his deathbed, the action is considered to be conditional, that's not the case for a get. There is getting out tonight, but in the case of a shchivmara, in the case of a person who's dying, we regard, as far as everything except divorce, all of his actions as conditional. He only intended to do all of these things if he wasn't going to recover. But unless he makes that condition explicit in the get, we don't apply that principle to a get.
So they don't come back within 30 days.
But he didn't say that. He said, I'm here. If, for example, I'm dying, and I say, this beautiful table goes to Mr. Weinstein, and I happen to, unfortunately, recover, then you don't get the table. That's the normal interpretation of a deathbed request. Even though I didn't make it explicit that you're only going to get it if and when I die, if I think I'm about to die and I make a whole lot of bequests, it's normally understood that all of them are conditional. Okay? And that rule is should, if we apply the principles of ordinary contract law, apply equally well to a get, then the Gemara says it doesn't apply to a get. So, in four of these five cases, then is the last case. The last case is the issue of coercion. The principle of the Gemara is that Tulua v'zavin, zvina is zvina. If you're strung up by your thumbs and persuaded to sell a parcel of land, normally that sale is regarded as valid, assuming that you got the correct market price. But it wasn't. Let me get you another chair.
No,
there's only one more chair left. Otherwise, we're going to have to. It's very hard for us to distinguish when somebody does something under coercion. So for normal contract law, if the contract is reasonable to claim. If the contract is unreasonable, if the price does not meet what the market is and so on, then of course the contract is invalid. But if the price is reasonable, a claim of coercion is generally denied. But this is in order to be able to facilitate the market, right? So if we were going to apply the rules of contract law, then the principle would be that a woman who is also coerced into marriage, we would regard the marriage as valid, and the Gemara says that that's not the case. A shotgun marriage, when it's applied to a woman, doesn't hold water. Okay, so we'll go through all of these cases because it's important for us to see the actual text in the Gemara. Two out of these five cases, that is, the one of the abduction and the one of the coercion, are relatively easy for us to understand and handle, because they relate to the invalidation of the initial contract, right? The rabbis are saying that this marriage is invalid, it never took place. The other three, having to do with the validation of a divorce, are much more problematic. The man and the woman may have been married for 30 years, and now what right do the rabbis have to say that a marriage which had actually been continuing in progress all of this time has been declared as invalid because they do not want to, they want to validate a get which normally we would regard it as invalid. So those are things that we will have to bear in mind and see how the Rishonim and the Achronim dealt with that problem. But the classical case of all of this is the story of Hillel, who was dealing with the Hellenized and secularized population in Alexandria, where indeed women were betrothed and then again were, in quotation marks, kidnapped before the marriage to the originally designated husband was consummated. And then you had a lot of children from these marriages, and were they to be declared as mamzerim or not? So Hillel had to find some way of invalidating the original. Remember, during that time, the Kiddushin had occurred some length of time before the Nisuin, and he had to find some way of validating the second marriage, which, that is, the one that actually physically took place, the one that was consummated, which meant invalidating the preceding marriage, which, according to private and contract law, would have been a valid marriage. So those are the six cases. We'll study them first, sort of in the opposite order, but let's go through the pages now. Then we'll come to the cases again. Okay. So the first is, as I said, the issue of cancellation of a divorce. And this is a Mishnah on Gittin. Hashaleach, on page 3 of my handout. Hashaleach get le'ishto, v'higia v'ashaliach. O she'shalach achrav shliach, v'amar lo, get she'natati lecha batel. If he's able to intercept the messenger, a man is sending a divorce to his wife by messenger, and he's able to intercept the messenger before the get is actually delivered, then the get is invalidated. Similarly, if he is able to intervene with the wife and tell her that whatever get I intended to deliver you is invalid, that cancels. If she gia get liyada, shul eino yichol levatlo. But once the get has been delivered, he no longer is capable of canceling it. Barishona haya oseh beitin mimakom acher umavatlo. Originally, he was able to convene a court, that is, gather three people together and declare in front of these three people that this get is invalid, and he made this declaration in public before the get was actually delivered, but the wife, who was in some other town, would have no way of knowing that this has taken place. Hitkin Rabban Gamliel hazaken shelo yeosin kein b'pnei tikkun olam. Rabban Gamliel enacted a ruling preventing this type of action. In other words, a husband should not be allowed to convene after having delivered a get to the hand of the messenger, to the hand of the agent. He has not the right to convene, say it takes 2 months to get from Tel Aviv to Shanghai where the wife is residing, he's going by camel or something, and he has plenty of time, and in the middle the husband changes his mind. Prior to Rabban Gamliel, he could just convene a bezdin and cancel the get, and the get would be canceled. Rabban Gamliel said that this cannot be allowed because of the obvious evil effects. And the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, what if, from the language of the Mishnah, all that would be apparent is that the Rabban Gamliel made a law discouraging this particular practice. But what happens if the husband actually goes ahead and does it? In contrast to Rabban Gamliel's enactment. Tanu Rabbanan, Bitlo Mevutal Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says that all that Rabban Gamliel did was to make a ruling saying that this should not be done. But if the husband goes ahead and does it, there's no penalty. Rabban Shimon Gamliel on there, Eino yachol lo levat lo v'lo lahosif ad tna'o. The husband can neither cancel the get nor modify the conditions if the get carries some conditions with it. She'im kein makoch beis din yafet. Because if not, what in fact has the court achieved? What has Rabban Gamliel achieved by his ruling? Simply to advise the husband not to do it if he's a difficult man and he wants to torture his wife, then no instruction from Rabban Gamliel is going to make him change his mind. Therefore, says Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, this Rabban Gamliel's declaration carried with it a consequence, a penalty, namely that the divorce has been made valid, even though, in principle, according to contract law, it should be invalid. And the Gemara asks, "Umi ika midi de midiyoraita batel gita?" How is it possible that, as far as the Din Torah is concerned, this get is invalid? Umishum ma koach betin yafesh sharinan eshet ish la'alma. And in order to honor the courts, in order to make the court decision, Rabban Gamliel's decision, powerful, you're now going to allow a woman who's technically speaking a married woman to then be married to someone else. In the Gemara says, Kol de makadesh adatad rabbanon makadesh viafke inu rabbanon lekedushime. All marriages are made conditional on the intention of the rabbis, and the rabbis have uprooted this particular marriage. The Gemara has some questions, some problems with this. Even the Gemara has some problems with this. Amale Rabbina Larvashi Tinach the Kaddish Bekaspa. This is fine if the original wedding had been a money wedding, like we do today. You give a ring and say Harayat Makudesh Etli. And therefore, since the rabbis have the power of Hefker Beit Din Hefker, they have the right of seizure of all property, then they can say that this particular money that the husband had used to effect the Kedushin was not his. It was taken away from him because of Hefker Beit Din Hefker, and therefore that original contract never took place, and this woman was not married. Aval, the Gemara says, Kideish Bebiya Mayikol HaMeimah. There were alternative forms of marriage, namely one being simply engagement in intimate relations as a form of Kiddushin. The rabbis can't use the power of expropriation to eliminate a physically intimate act that has taken place. And the Gemara gives a mysterious answer that it gives in all five of these places. Shavye Rabbanon levi'ilato bi'latznut. The rabbis simply have made his act of consummation of the marriage, a simple act of fornication carrying no contractual obligations with it. And the Gemara leaves it at that, doesn't tell us what powers the rabbis had to do this. The theory of Hefker Beitin Hefker doesn't apply, but nevertheless they are empowered to do that. Okay? So that's case number one.
Does that hold even if the woman becomes pregnant, conceived during that?
Yeah, she may have three children and five grandchildren, and this is occurring after 40 years of marriage. The implication here seems to be, and we'll see that it's not necessarily so, but certainly the Rishonim took it this way, we'll see that the Achronim took it somewhat differently, that somehow or other, ex post facto, retroactively, this marriage has never existed. So now it turns out that for 40 years they have in fact been living in an unmarried state.
John Kennedy is
I'm saying the Catholic Church does the same thing.
Okay. A difficult interpretation, and we'll see that the Achronim reject that interpretation in favor of a much more mysterious interpretation.
Well, where does that leave the children?
The children are perfectly fine.
Uh-huh.
In Jewish law, a mamzer is only as a result of a relationship which is forbidden with an Issur Kares. So children which are a result of an unmarried union of their parents are perfectly legitimate in Jewish law. Okay?
Is this a strange twist on Hefker Beit Din because it's retroactive? In other words, normally...
Yeah, even the Hefker Beit Din part is strange because it's retroactive. But the Shavir Rabbanon Levilato Be'ilat Znot is mysterious. It's not just simply retroactive. But what power did they have to do this? Okay? The implication seems to be in the Gemara, and we'll see in the Rashba, he really seriously comes to grips with this problem and offers some reasonable interpretations of it. But the implication seems to be when the Gemara says, the Gemara has a mixture of things. It says, "Kol demakadesh adatet arabanan makadesh." What does that mean? The straightforward interpretation of that, the one given by Rashi, for example, is that when someone says "Hareyach Mekudeshet Li Kedat Moshe V'Yisrael," it means that he is taking this original marriage contract to be contingent on the rabbi's laws and decisions, and therefore he's willing to abide by them. It becomes a little difficult in some of these cases where it's clear that the man is acting against rabbinical ordinance. And therefore, it can't exactly mean that. Life would be very easy if you could put the burden of all of this on an interpretation of private contract law. A man, when he gets married to a woman, says explicitly, "Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael," and we could interpret that, says Rashi, to mean that his intent, his contract, is contingent on all of the various regulations that the rabbis enact, and therefore, if, for example, toward the end of his life, it turns out that he wants to cancel a get when his wife is far away, then his original contract has a clause in it which says that the contract has been declared null and void ab initio because some 40 years later he goes against the rabbinical decision, Rabban Gamliel's takana, of not being able to cancel a get at a distance. That in and of itself is a pretty strange construction. But, and furthermore, as we mentioned when we studied this the last time, the archaeological evidence indicates that Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael had an entirely different significance because recent documents showed that there were marriage contracts between Jews where they insisted that they were getting married according to Greek law, which carried an entirely different, Jews in the United States may not get married and declare that they want to only get married according to the laws of the state of Massachusetts, but they're not interested in the penalties attached to Jewish law, for example. Okay, let's go to the second case. Hahu Uvda Dahavi Benarish. The case here is the following. As you all know, a father has the right to marry off his daughter. So if I have a daughter and someone gives me money and says, "Harei bitach mukudeshet li b'kesef zu or b'tabat zu," I, as the father, have the right to sell off my daughter in marriage, provided that she's a minor. That's one of the anachronisms that still exists in Jewish law. But even in this anachronistic situation, I only have the right to do it once. If, for example, she gets divorced after this marriage, so she's now a free woman, even though she's still only 5 years old, I don't have the right to marry her off again. Midin d'oraita. The rabbis instituted a sort of weak form of kedushin, which allows the father, or in an alternative case, when the father dies, the close relatives who are guardians who don't have the legal right to marry off their daughter, to marry off their minor daughter, either the father after she has been divorced or the mother after the father's death. But this marriage is only partially valid. It's not really a valid marriage. Right? So, Hahu Uvda Dahavi Banarish, so that the Kadsha Kishihi Ktana, this was a girl who either the father or the surviving relatives could not, Midin D'oraita, marry her off, the Gadla, and now she reached the age of majority, Votvei Avi Kursaya, she was seated on the bridal chair, the Ata Achrina Vachatfamine, and someone else came and abducted her from the bridal chair. Again, I think we have to take the word abducted here with a grain of salt. The girl ran off, well, let's say she was taken off, she was swept away by a different man other than her semi-official husband. Okay? The students of Rav were there. They certainly were not going to allow the second marriage to exist, but they didn't even require a get from the second marriage. Now again, this is a difficult situation because midin d'oraita, the first marriage had no validity, so until the actual nisuin or the kiddush, the consummation of the first marriage took place after the girl's majority, after she reached the age of 12, anything that happened prior to that had no status midin d'oraita. Here she ran off. She was swept away by this other man who performed a legitimate kedushin. Nevertheless, Rav Bruna and Rav Hananel said that not only does the second husband have to give her up, but he doesn't even have to give her a get. Okay? Amar Rav Papa. So the question is, how is this possible? So the Gemara gives two distinct answers. Amar Rav Papa, Benarish Minsav Nasivi Vahadar Motfiya Bikusaya. Maybe the custom in Narish was that the girl, in contrary to all other custom where the woman sits on the bridal chair prior to the actual marriage, I mean, we still retain that custom today, right? For the Deccan of the Kala, which as we pointed out is probably the most ancient of the aspects of the Maris ritual, going back to the Hammurabi texts and earlier, is what survives today. But our current custom, where the actual kedushin is officially declared to be with the placing of the ring on the finger, with the handing of the ring to the girl, that takes place after sitting on the chair. Rav Papa said maybe in Narish there was a reverse, that the girl accepts her guests on the bridal chair, so therefore the first marriage had in fact been validated completely, and of course if a man runs off with a married woman, then of course he doesn't have to give her again. Rav Ashi Amar, Hu Asa Shelo Kehogen, he, the abductor, acted improperly. Lefichach Asu Bo Shelo Kehogen V'Yafkinu Rabbanan L'Kiddushin Menei. And therefore the rabbis treated him not in strict accordance with the law and annulled his Kiddushin. And now the Gemara asks the same formula. Omer Le Rabbina La Rav Ashi Tinech De Kaddish Bekaspo Kaddish BeBiyamai Shavi Rabbanan L'Vilato B'Ilatzlo. The same question and the same answer, which we will see repeated five times. Okay? The third case is Ar Gemara in Ketubot. Omar Rava. This is the actual continuation of the Gemara in Ketubot where we left it off. Uli Inyan Gitin Enoke. This principle that we saw, that if the man can't complete the marriage within 12 months due to some external circumstance, like he got sick or she got sick or what have you, he doesn't carry the penalty, right? That was what we saw in the Gemara 2 weeks ago. In other words, there isn't a claim of force majeure, that a man is not responsible for forces beyond his control. Rava says that this rule, that a man is not responsible for forces beyond his control, does not apply to Gittin. Alma kasava Rava ein ones begittin. Rava is of the opinion that there is no claim of force majeure when it applies to a get. Menale lo Rava ha. How does Rava know this? If it comes from the Mishnah that says that if a man says that if I don't return to you within 12 months and the man dies within the 12 month period, the divorce is not valid. All that the Mishnah says is that a dead man can't issue a divorce. That if death precedes the time that the divorce was supposed to become effective, then that divorce is not effective. Chala, hareza get. Perhaps if all that happened was that he was ill and therefore detained against his will, then the get might be valid. V'dilma la'omer l'chachala nami enu get, v'hi gufa kamashmal and the en get le'achamisa, en get le'achamisa, hot tanele resha. So therefore you can't prove it from that. If I don't, the man says, here's a get, if I don't return within 30 days, that the get should be valid. He was trying to get back within 30 days, but the bridge broke down, he can't get across the river. He's screaming from the other side of the river, look, I'm coming, look, I'm coming. Amar Shmuel lav shmei matya. That's still not considered coming. V'dilma unsa d'shchiach shayni, the kevin d'iboyle l'itnuye v'lo v'itnu ihu d'yaser d'nashayu. Ela, rova svarad d'nasheka amar. That this doesn't depend upon the frequency or lack of frequency of this accident, but he is stating his own opinion. Mishum tznuot u'mishum putzot. This is because of women who are either unduly fearful, unduly modest, or unduly immodest. Mishum tznuot, di amot lo halahavi get, zimnam de lo onis. If you say that in such a situation it's not a get, perhaps there will be circumstances in which there was no force majeure. And therefore the get, you mean the husband isn't here. The wife doesn't know whether he was unaccounted, unforcibly detained or unforcibly detained. Perhaps he was not forcibly detained. He really intended to wander off and not come back, and the wife should be divorced. But she's sitting there, and being a very modest woman, worries, or a very loyal wife, worries, maybe my husband is still coming back, or tried to come back and couldn't make it because of some reason, and she will never remarry. That's the case of the tznuot. Umiyagnovi yatva mishum pritzot, v'i amut lo lahavigita zinim da'anis, v'i amui lo anis, v'i azal minzaba. And the reverse, the wife might be unduly hasty, and even though the husband was detained against his will, and therefore the get is invalid, she's going to hurry up and marry the next man that comes along that's suitable, and then all of the children of that second marriage will be mamzerim, because this divorce was never valid. So basically it's similar to the situation of the cancellation of the get. The woman is placed in an untenable situation because she will never know whether or not this particular clause has been met. So we can't ever tell whether the reason that the husband hasn't returned is because he didn't intend to return or because he was forcibly detained. The fact that he's not here gives us no light on that issue. Okay. Umi'i kamidi, now the repetition of the same discussion. So the Gemara says, in kol de makadesh adatado rabbanan makadesh, v'yafkinon rabbanan l'kiddushin menet. Omele Rabina La Rabashi Tinef the Kaddish Bakaspa Kiddish Babia Maika Lameima Shavya Rabbanon Vilata Udi Latzma. The same refrain. Okay? All right. The next case on page 9 of my handout. Ze gitach me hayom im meiti micholi ze. The man, we've already understood that a man cannot deliver a get to be valid after his death. A dead man cannot issue a get. But if a man says, I'm divorcing you as of now, if I don't recover, if I die from this particular illness, in principle that is a get. And there would be frequently many reasons to want to issue such a get, especially if there's a problem of a yavam who might cause trouble for the woman. So Zaki Tachme Ayom and Meti Michol Zevi Amad Bahalach Bashuk Bahalava Mate. So now, how do we tell whether he died from that illness? He got up from his sick bed, he walked around a bit in the marketplace, and then he fell sick again and died. On dim oto, we try to estimate him mate machmat foliar he shown mate, hareiz get, the imlav eno get. Amara Huna Gitoka Matanato. This is the thing that concerns us. Ma manato imamad choseir, afgito imamad choseir. Okay? So now the Gemara comes back, and let me skip down to the bottom. Rabba varova, lo sviru luhu hodra avhuna, gzeir Hashem ayinu yeshket liachamita, umiika midi, umidi araita lo havigita, umishum gzeir Hasharina neyeshet ish li alma, in, koldu makadesh edate do rabbanu makadesh, viafkinu rabbanu likidushin minay. Omale Rabino the Ravashi Tina Pekadish Bekaspa Kiddish Bibia Maika Lameima Omale Shavi Rabbanon Bilato Bilatsnut. That's the next to the last case where the Gemara uses this phraseology that we're going to quote. And the last case is in Bava Batra. As I mentioned, an ordinary contract, not a marriage contract, which is carried out under coercion, is usually validated. The court will not hear a claim that I have to sell my piece of property because I was coerced into doing so. As long as the objective circumstances of the sale are reasonable, the price is right and so on, the sale will not be terminated because a man claims that he had a gun pointed against his head. But that does not apply to Kiddushin. The Amar Amemar Tluya V'Kaddish Kiddushav Kiddushin Amemar suggests the rule that if someone also forces a woman into marriage, the marriage is valid. Mar baravashi amar beisha, as far as marriage is concerned, vadai kiddushin lo havi. Certainly, a marriage where the woman has been coerced into marrying the man is not valid. Hu asa shelo kahogen, lefichach asu imo shelo kahogen liavke inhu rabbanan lekiddushin mina. Therefore, the rabbis have revoked his kiddushin. Amale Rabino la Ravashi Tinich the Kaddish Bekaspa Kiddush Bebia Ma'ika Lameimar. Amale Shavi Rabbanan Levi Lato Bihi Latzma. The same refrain. And the last case, which is important for us, but which the Gemara doesn't question because it has a technical explanation, is the case of Alexandria. The Gemara says Hilel Hazakein Hayod Doresh Lashon Hedyot. There are a number of cases in which the Gemara lists in which the judicial authorities have gone into some great detail in common usage. And this was one of them. Ditanya. Anshei Alexandria hayuma kachin et neshotehem. The people of Alexandria would betroth their wives. Uvishat knisatan l'chupa. But when the time came to consummate the marriage, to have the chupa, ba'in acherim v'chotfein otamehem. Others come and kidnap the women. So here's again a case which we presumably should interpret as the parents arranging some marriage, and there's a long interval between the actual kiddushin and the nisuin, and in the meantime the girl meets an attractive suitor and decides to elope with him. The Gemara calls this chotfin achal tamehem, but I don't think we have to take that language seriously. But now, in contrast to the case that we studied in Naresh, a few centuries later than this one, the new husband The eloped couple have now been living together for a while, and they have children and so on. Uvikshu chachamim lasot b'nehem mamzerim. Then the local rabbis wanted now to declare all of the children of these marriages mamzer, right? Apparently there was some motion of becoming a little bit more frum in Alexandria after a while, and here all of these families which had descended from the couples which had eloped would now be declared as mamzer.
Wouldn't the second marriage be more, the second
No, this is not a case. This is a case where there was this, in contrast to the previous case where there was no biblically no valid first marriage. Here there was an honest kedusha. That is the girl or her father, whichever one, say the girl had accepted the money of kedusha, right?
But
there's a valid kedushin. Once the man says, "Hare at mukudeshet li betabat zu kedat Moshe v'Yisrael," in front of two witnesses, that woman is married. The difference between those days and these days is that in those days, the actual chuppah, the consummation of the marriage, may take 3 or 4 months or a year later. So a man goes to a woman in front of two witnesses and a ceremony in court and so on. He gives the woman the money of kedushin, right? And then, according to the standard custom, the procedure would be that they may wait half a year for the actual consummation of the marriage. And in the meantime, she's run off with somebody else. And this was an epidemic of such occurrences. It wasn't a single occurrence. It wouldn't have come to Hillel HaZaken if it was just one such occurrence. So now the problem is that the local whoever they were are faced with the fact that technically speaking the second marriage is completely invalid, right?
And they're living together.
But you marry your wife, and a year later you go away on a trip, and when you come back you find that she's run off with somebody else. That's the situation. That's right. That's exactly the situation. There was a valid first marriage, but it wasn't consummated. Right? You marry your wife, you go away on a trip before you're able to, you're called off to war, World War II intervenes, you run off to war after you've made the kedushin, you come back, after a year later she's run off with somebody. What's the story? That's the situation that was faced here. What was different from the story that I just described, of course, was that the first marriage was never physically consummated. There was a perfectly valid marriage, valid according to all the laws of marriage contract, but it was never physically consummated, and within the interval between the time of the legal marriage and the physical consummation of the marriage, the woman has run off with somebody else. Okay? This is the influence, unfortunately, of the Hellenistic surroundings, right? Too much TV. This is what happens.
Rabbi, Isha Nikmeh, Shlomish, three ways.
That's right.
She fulfilled Bia.
No, there was no Bia here, but there was Kesef. There was Kedushin.
But the second one that she had.
But so what? I mean, that's what I'm saying. If she's already married to the first man, anything that the second one does is irrelevant. If the first marriage was technically valid, then this is a married woman. Now she's run off with another man. But not, it's not just one of them. It's a whole large group of Alexandrian Jews have descended from mothers who engaged in this activity. That was the problem that was facing Hillel HaZaken. Now, you know, if it was brought up before the Rabbanut today, presumably they would say, "Too bad, all of these people are mamzer." I mean, you know, if you're faced with this kind of a global situation and you're in a mood, which undoubtedly was taking place there, that there was a swing back towards being more frum and so on, and they realized that something illegal has taken place and it's a serious technical violation of the law. If you have no imagination and you're not able to come to grips with the problem, okay, it's a problem. Too bad. That's not what Hillel did. Let's see what Hillel did under these circumstances. Amar lahem Hillel azakein, heviu li ketubat imchem. Bring me a copy of your mother's marriage contract. I'm sure he didn't make a statistical sample or even gather all of the marriage contracts of all of the children in Alexandria who faced this problem. But he said, bring me a copy of a marriage contract. Heviru lo k'tuvat iman. He brought a copy of the marriage contract. U'matza shekatuv behem. And he found that the language of that marriage contract, in contrast to the ones that were being written in Jerusalem, the marriage contract in Alexandria said, or one of them, or however many he looked at, said, that when the chuppah takes place, you will be my wife. In other words, he looked at a couple of the marriage contracts and saw that they had a special wording that could be interpreted as meaning that the original kiddushin never was intended to take place until the time of the nisuin. And on the basis of this, he said that that must be the intent of all marriages in Alexandria. And therefore, all of these eloped second marriages are valid because the prior first marriage never took place. So this is a drastic, broad ruling of Hillel HaZaken to deal with an epidemic of Hellenistic influences where the girl sort of chose her own husband instead of the one picked by...